This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. A new analysis by the Environmental Working Group has aggregated results from more than 1,000 studies on pollution. Not atmospheric pollution, but the pollution in our own bodies. The EWG's report is called The Pollution in People, Cancer-Causing Chemicals in Americans' Bodies. It attempts to list all of the carcinogenic chemicals present in our bodies, including pesticides, solvents, flame retardants, and more. The report is an appropriate starting point for government and medical officials to address the often ignored risks of cancer from environmental sources. My guest is Kurt Della Valle. He is a senior scientist with the Environmental Working Group and lead author of the report, The Pollution in People. He's a former fellow at the National Cancer Institute, where he conducted research evaluating environmental contaminants and risk of cancer. Welcome to the program, Kurt.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So how unprecedented is the study? How significant is it in what it gathers together?
Well, yeah, what we set out to do was really take all of the literature that's out there on biomonitoring data on carcinogens and really create a full database of all that information so that it's available in one spot.
And so this has never been done before to this extent?
No, not having an inventory like this, no.
And so what sort of studies did you look at and aggregate? Can you give us an example of the kinds of studies that have been conducted that you put together?
Sure. I mean, there's the big study, the NHANES study conducted by the CDC, which is really addressing the health of the U.S., which is really, so that's really looking at, it's a really large study conducted on a yearly basis, ongoing for several decades, looking at exposures in the general population. And it's assessing health in general, but part of the thing they do is take some biomonitoring data. And then a lot of the studies are looking at specific populations, whether it's a geographic region. We found studies all over the world that have assessed carcinogens in people. And a lot of them focus on occupational exposures because those are the groups that are going to be really have the highest exposures of certain chemicals. So they're, if they're really the populations that if you're going to see a health effect come up, it's going to be first in those highly exposed occupational settings.
Right. So they're the canaries in the coal mine, if you will.
Exactly.
And so then, for example, you might have some studies in there pointing out the risks of pesticides to farm workers who have to use the pesticides and are around them a lot. But then you can extrapolate and say, if this is going to provide, have such outcomes and higher incidence of cancer among people who are exposed to pesticides in high levels, then can you extrapolate that to the general population? Is that part of what you studied it?
Right. Well, this was really a review study, but there are studies out there that, most of the studies focus on those occupational exposures. So whether it's farmers or pesticide applicators who are mixing and applying these pesticides, those are the main studies that are going to be used to assess carcinogenic risk. But there are also studies out there looking at, particularly susceptible populations. So these would be typically pregnant women or young children who might be exposed to much lower levels of residential pesticide use. And those studies do see some increased risks with, children that have either been exposed in the womb or at a very young age because they're particularly susceptible to even low levels of exposure.
And so do you also include studies where the chemicals that are found to be linked to cancer elsewhere are found in people's bodies? I mean, one might imagine that a blood test might reveal the presence of any number of chemicals from any one of our bodies, right?
Exactly. So, yeah, we really want to go out there and say, well, what is the looking at the known or likely carcinogens? So those are chemicals that have been identified by authoritative agencies like the World Health Organization's International Agency for Research on Cancer, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, the National Toxicology Program. So those bodies have periodic reviews of chemicals to assess the full body of scientific knowledge, and then they'll determine based on that body of knowledge whether it's, a carcinogen, not a carcinogen, a likely carcinogen. So we took their lists, and then we wanted to find out, well, what are the exposures that are of these chemicals that we know there's a strong evidence for them being carcinogenic? What are we finding in human populations in terms of exposure levels?
And so what did you find? I mean, I'm sort of scared to ask of what people have in their bodies, even from birth, because as you said, you have in utero exposure.
Right. So, I mean, I think the big thing from the report is really just documenting that these, you know, we found evidence of, you know, upwards of 420 chemicals that have been detected in people, carcinogenic chemicals, that is. And, you know, I think the real take home is here is that these exposures are really pervasive in our society. So they're coming from, you know, all different avenues of, you know, potential exposure from, you know, commercial products, industrial use of these chemicals, pollution, you know, combustion of diesel fuel, to even disinfecting our drinking water. We use these a lot in solvents and plastics. So in almost every avenue of life, you know, you have potential exposure to carcinogenic chemicals. And some of these, I think we can make some life decisions. So, you know, not smoking, you know, maybe filtering our drinking water, buying, you know, greener products. But, you know, I think the pervasiveness of these exposures show that it's not something we can really just shop our way out of. And it's really going to take a combination of individual behavior and also stronger environmental regulations, right, to really help.
So let's tackle some of these chemicals. Well, we can't go through all 420 of them, but some of the common ones. I mean, we know, for example, that chemicals that are used to make furniture flame retardant have been linked to cancer. You know, just your sofa or even children's furniture like car seats, etc. What are those chemicals? How do they get into the bodies of human beings?
So a lot of these flame retardant chemicals are called PBDEs, and, you know, they're just something that are maybe sprayed in the fabric of your upholstery or, you know, even articles of clothing. And really the exposure comes through contact. So whether it's just sitting on your sofa, or sometimes, you know, the dust can accumulate, and, you know, especially children, they roll around on the floor a lot of hand to mouth contact. So they can get high exposures just through the, you know, the chemicals that accumulate in the dust in the home.
Right. Children's pajamas are often treated with flame retardants because there's, you know, such fear that children might, I don't know, spontaneously combust, but, or just, I guess it's a fear of if they are exposed to fire, their clothes catch on fire. So they're treated with flame retardants, but those low level risks add up, right? I mean, isn't there this fear of accumulation in our bodies?
Right. I think that's a great point, is that, you know, we are exposed to a whole slew of chemicals, and we're not really sure how that full combination of everything we're exposed to affects our health. So, you know, that's certainly an avenue that needs more research.
Right. And then there are things like Teflon coatings on nonstick pans, everyday household items, to the point where you don't have to, you know, be a worker in a hazardous environment to get exposed to these chemicals, just your everyday kind of household items, such as your furniture and the pans that you cook your food on, are often treated with chemicals that are known carcinogens, right?
So certainly, like, historically, the Teflon has had a known carcinogen called PFOA, and that can be released if you're cooking on some of these older nonstick cookware, you know, especially if it's worn out or scratched, or if you heat it to too high of a temperature. Some of those chemicals can leach into the food or even vaporize into the surrounding air.
And what about the way in which these chemicals are regulated? Let's talk about that, because that's really important. As you said, you can't just buy your way out of this. I mean, I think many of us would imagine, because it feels so hard to impact our government, that, you know, if we were to just, as consumers, you know, buy certain things over other things, that will affect change. And that does work sometimes to an extent. But what about the kind of regulation that is or isn't there from our government to address these? And I understand that the U.S. is far behind European countries and even Canada on carcinogenic chemicals in everyday items, right?
certainly from a consumer standpoint, yeah, we have lagged behind there. You know, I mean, part of the problem is that the current regulation and even the newer regulation, which has gone through Congress at this time, really doesn't provide EPA with, or FDA even, with the tools they need to properly regulate a lot of these chemicals, whether it's testing of the chemicals so that we know they're safe before they reach market, or even the chemicals that we know cause health effects, you know, carcinogens, for example, like asbestos or formaldehyde, like those things can still be found in a lot of consumer products. And, you know, it's a real problem. But I also think it's sort of a mixed bag here, because we've seen that effective regulation can really have strong public health benefits. So, for example, taking lead out of gasoline or not using new paints anymore. When that happened, you know, we saw a real sharp decline in the lead levels in humans. Mm. So I think that really speaks to, you know, if we do have these strong regulations, you know, we can see a real benefit. So there is a positive side of the regulation, even right. if it's not effective right now.
Now, we're supposed to have the regulations in place, such as the Toxic Substances Control Act, right? I understand this is sort of out of date and really needs updating. Is there political will to do it?
Right. So the Toxic Substances Control Act was enacted in the 70s. It hasn't been updated since. And that is the act that's currently been revised and gone through the Senate. And, you know, while there's some strengthening of the legislation, it still lacks a lot of the teeth really needed to review chemicals in a speedy fashion, especially ones that are highly suspicious, and also lacks the regulatory strength to take out a lot of chemicals from commerce that we know are dangerous. So, you know, it really lacks in a lot of ways.
Right. I mean, couldn't it just have an embodiment of the precautionary principle in it, that any chemical to be approved by the government first needs to prove it's safe, rather than simply letting it be released and then wait for studies to come out proving it's dangerous?
I think that's exactly right. The burden of proof shouldn't be on the consumer. It should be before it comes to market.
And again, many other countries apply the precautionary principle. The U.S. just doesn't. I understand earlier this year, President Obama supported Vice President Joe Biden's initiative on cancer, high-profile establishment of the National Cancer Moonshot Initiative, and Joe Biden's desire to, quote, eliminate cancer as we know it. So one might imagine that this initiative would try to address environmental links to cancer, right? Because, I mean, genetic factors do impact people and their cancer risk, but those are usually a very small percentage of all of the people who might get cancer in their lifetime. So does this initiative actually address environmental concerns and links to cancer?
The initiative is really focused on treatment and finding the cancer cure. And so that's obviously critically important. We certainly could use better, more effective treatments. You know, people are going to be getting cancer, especially, you know, as the population ages in higher numbers. So finding a cure is clearly important. But, you know, I think you raise a good point, is that we should also be focusing on some prevention, looking at risk factors. And, you know, there hasn't been a lot of discussion of that up to this point in the Moonshot Initiative. And, you know, environmental factors certainly are a piece of that pie of cancer-causing agents. And, you know, it makes sense to invest some resources looking at that issue.
I mean, we get it on the issue of cigarette smoking, right? I mean, clearly, cigarette smoking is an environmental risk factor that now nobody argues is, you know, very important to address in its links to lung cancer and many, many other cancers. Why can't we apply the same standard that we have for cigarette smoking to all these other carcinogens, to all these other environmental cancer risks?
Yeah, I mean, we do know of a lot of environmental cancer risks out there, and you know, I think part of the issue may be trying to balance between living in a modern technological age where, you know, a lot of the products we buy are plastics and whatever, and they have great benefit in society, and trying to balance that with having a you know, healthy planet and a good healthy population.
Well, there's also corporate profits involved, right? Which often, unfortunately, determine the use of these chemicals, except when you have regulations to hold corporations' feet to the fire in other countries besides the U.S.
Right. Yeah. I mean, unfortunately, the issue of profits isn't always or generally not aligned with public health interests.
Yeah. Well, Kurt, where can people find out more about this report? Is there a website?
Sure. They can go to ewg.org/cancer. And we have the report posted there, as well as some other information on cancer prevention that there people can.
And we'll post a link to that from our website later today. Kurt, thanks so much for joining us.
Okay, thank you for having me.
Kurt Della Valle is a senior scientist with the Environmental Working Group, lead author of the report that we've been discussing, The Pollution in People. He is former fellow at the National Cancer Institute, where he conducted research evaluating environmental contaminants and the risk of cancer. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com.